Welcome to Lectionary Lunch for this week. Our Old Testament lesson is Isaiah chapter 45, verses 1 to 7. In this passage, God speaks to Cyrus and calls, or at least speaks about what he will call Cyrus to do. So we begin with verse 1. Ko amar Yahweh lamishiko. Thus has said Yahweh to his anointed one, lamishiko. Obviously, this is the same word, mashach, from which we get the more commonly known to us theological term, Messiah. But Messiah, of course, just means one who's been anointed. And here we have Cyrus called an anointed. Cyrus is mentioned by name in the next phrase. Lekoresh, to Cyrus, asher hechaziki bimino, to Cyrus whom I have grasped, I have taken by his right hand. Yamino is yamin is right, and here hand is understood. Larad to subdue here, this term, same word used in Genesis chapter 1 for God giving them, giving to Adam and Eve control of the land and telling them to subdue it. Same term here. You know, some people there in Genesis 1 want to take this as almost a negative. So why did God tell them to subdue the land, as if there's some negative connotation? But there's really no negative connotation to this word. It's a neutral term, just really means to rule or govern. It can be used in a negative way, and is sometimes used in a negative way, but not often, and there's no negative connotation here. God has simply given the authority into the hand of Cyrus to govern. So to subdue, lipanao, before him, goyim, nations, many nations, we might insert the word many here. U'matane melakim afateach. How should we translate this word here? Matanaim, usually in the dual. This word often means loins, thighs, but here probably not the thighs. It doesn't make any sense to loosen the thighs. Probably here it's a case of metaphorically speaking, for the things that cover the thighs. So some people translate this belt or sash, the whatever it is, whatever article of clothing it is that you bind on that covers the thighs, they will sash. And here, this is a sign of subjugation, really, that he will basically strip off the clothing of kings and leave them naked. Is a sign of that he will humiliate them, and that's the point here. We might even say something like to strip bare kings. That would communicate the idea of the text, although not in precisely the wording of it. Leptoach lepanao dalathaim, to open before him doors, delath, dalath, our word for the letter, Hebrew letter dalath, refers to a door. So doors to open by him, usharim lo yishagedu, so that, probably here results clause, so that gates may not be closed. In other words, he's going to, again, not force the gates open, the doors open, so that the gates cannot be closed against him. All of these are, in various ways, indications of power, of victory, of they spell out really what's meant by rada, to subdue, here. So, verse 2. Ani lepanecha Elik, and I myself, here the pronoun is used, and probably the best way to understand this is emphatically. It's not needed. We have the first person in the verb, but here the pronoun specifically given and also placed first in the verse of implies emphasis. So I myself before you will go, or I myself will go before you. Uhadurim, and the honored places, or perhaps the exalted places. Oshir, I will, or here probably Hadurim more in the place of elevated places. I will make straight, a common theme in the prophets to make, to level out the places that are elevated, you know, to bring down that which is high, to raise up that which is low. There's a common theme in Isaiah and elsewhere, and we have it here. We don't have the other side, the raising up the low, but we do have the bringing down the high here. So the exalted or elevated places I will make flat, I will make straight. Daltoth, Nechusha, Ashaver, and the doors, this word delet we had a moment ago, the doors of bronze, Nechusha, or Nechusha, more commonly, the doors of bronze I will shatter. Shavar in the PL, to shatter or to break. Often we say that the PL is a little more intensive. That's not really the most common use of the PL. There are other uses of the PL that's more common than the intensive. The facultative, for example, making transitive and intransitive verb is more common. But here with this particular root, shavar, is a sort of textbook example of a word where the PL really is more intensive or more emphatic than the call. So shavar and the call to break and the PL to shatter and apply a little more force. Break the shatter the doors of bronze. And the berichei barzel, the bars of iron, agadea, I will gada, I will cut you. So he will break bars, shatter the doors, break the bars again so that the city can't be held against Cyrus. Verse 3. Wanathati lecha, and I will give to you otsaroth choshek, treasures of darkness. And here, well, these are treasures that are hidden in darkness. Treasures of darkness in the sense of that's their location. That's treasures that have been hidden away out of sight. And this is confirmed also by the next phrase. Umatumune mistarim. Hidden treasures were something of a synonym here. Hidden treasures that are in secret places. I guess is probably the best way to translate this. A satar, usually to secret or hide something. And so here these are places of where things have been secreted or hidden. So treasures of darkness and treasures hidden, secret treasures in hidden places, restates the same idea. Lema'an here in the sense of purpose, so that Teda, you may know, ki ani Yahweh, that I am Yahweh. And now we get a relative clause without the relative pronoun, but with the definite article and participle, another very common way of expressing relative clauses in Hebrew. You may know that I am Yahweh, hekare basimka ele Yisrael, the one who calls, or who calls you by your name. I am Yahweh, the one who calls you by your name. And this last phrase, Elohai Yisrael, and a positive redefining Yahweh, namely the God of Israel. Verse 4. Then, Lama'an. And here we just saw Lama'an used to indicate purpose. Here we get Lama'an used again, but in a slightly different sense. A common sense of Lama'an, but different than the one we just had. Here mean more in the sense of for the sake of, to the benefit of, Lama'an Adi Yaakov, for the sake of or for the benefit of my servant Jacob. Well, Yisrael Barkiri, and for Israel, my chosen one, my Bahir, my selected or chosen one. Wa Ekra Laka Basimeka. And I have, here we have while consecutive perfect, while consecutive imperfect, we'll translate it as past tense, and I have called to you by your name, ken ka walo yadatani. And I have given you a title, that is to say, I've honored you. I've given you not just a name, but I've given you a position, an honorable position with a title, kana. So I have honored you, perhaps in my translate, or even flattered you, or given you, made your name important, or given you a title. All these are possible translations of kana here. Walo yadat. Having trouble saying Hebrew today. Yadatani. Even though, here the wow is concessive, even though you did not know me. So God has honored Cyrus, and makes the text makes it clear that Cyrus is not a worshiper of Yahweh, and the fact God has chosen him despite the fact that he is not, so that God's power can be all the more evident because of his choice of someone who is not one of his worshipers. Verse 5, Ani Yahweh, I am Yahweh. Get this declaration throughout the book of Exodus when God is addressing the Egyptians to make it clear who he is. Pharaoh in chapter 3, chapter 4, when Moses first goes to Pharaoh, Pharaoh responds by saying, who is this Yahweh? I don't know anything about him. I'm not certainly not going to do what he says. And then in the subsequent chapters through chapter 15, the book of Exodus, we see this theme repeated over and over. I am Yahweh. I'm going to show you who I am by what I do. Also in the book of Ezekiel, this is another common theme of God demonstrating before the nations and before the false gods who he is. And we see this phrase used repeatedly over and over in those contexts. So, Ani Yahweh. I am Yahweh. Wa'ein od zulathi. And there is not another Zulathi, here we've got particle Zul, except or only, and then with a personal suffix on the end, we might say there is no other besides me, or there is no other except me, Zulathi. Next phrase, Ein Elohim, there is no God, there is no implies other God. So I am Yahweh, there is no other besides, there is no other. You could actually, interestingly, you could actually break this in one of two places. You could break it after the ode or after the Zulathi. And the Masoretic text breaks it after, puts the comma, if you will, the Zakef Katon, after the ode. I am Yahweh and there is no other. And besides me, there is no God. And if we follow the Masoretic text reading, that might be a little smoother way of handling the text there. And then the last phrase, as ka walo yadatani. Here we have a PL from azar, not a common, particularly common word. I have girded you, I have sort of equipped you, prepared you. In other words, again, it's referring back to the activity of God in calling Cyrus and putting him in place so that he can succeed. God says, I have, we might say, equipped you, I've gotten you ready, I've prepared you, I've girded you up, you know, put on your sword. Walo yadatani, even though, again, another concessive wow, even though you did not know me. The point is repeated as at the end of verse 4. Lama'an, here we have another one. And this one, we're back to purpose again. Lama'an yedu, in order that they may know, Mizrach, from the sunrise, here's Zerach, the place in the east where the sun rises. So from the, we might translate from the east, from the Mimzerach Shemesh, from the rising of the sun. Umim Ezrava, here we have the word Erev, from the place of the Erev, from the place of the east. This word Arav, Ma'arav here means the west. So in order that they may know from the east, from the place where the sun rises, to the west. Ki Ephes Bela'adi, that there is Ephes, nothing really. This is the modern Hebrew word for zero. You know, classical Hebrew doesn't have a word for zero. This is the modern Hebrew word for zero, Ephes. Doesn't really mean zero in the Old Testament, but nothing is something that it does mean. Now, if there is nothing, or here again, since we're talking about deities, we might say no one, no other gods is the implication. Bila'adi, without me or besides me. And the Yahweh wa'ain od, the point kind of hammered home again here. I am Yahweh and there is od. There is not another. There is no other. There is not other od. There is no other one besides me. So again, we get these short phrases kind of hammering home the same idea repeatedly over and over and over again in these verses. It makes this one of the strongest sections in the Old Testament in terms of the what we may think of as absolute monotheism. And critical scholarship like to argue that this is a sign of the lateness of this text, that we get this notion that Yahweh is not just the chief of the gods, not just the God that Israel favors, but that he is absolutely, uncategorically the only God. Well, I don't know that we need to address that point. There are plenty of other places in the Old Testament where this is either implied or assumed, if not stated as boldly as it is here. It really provides the conceptual framework of the entire Old Testament faith. So it isn't necessarily as late as critical scholarship used to argue anyway. Well, I am Yahweh and there is not another. Now, verse 7 gives us several phrases that further define who Yahweh is. So all these phrases serve as positives to tell us who Yahweh is. The first, Yotzer Or, the one who creates light. And notice these are called participles here, characteristic action, the one who creates light. Well, Borea Choshek, and creates darkness, or perhaps you might say forms light and creates darkness. Yotzer, from the verb Yatzar, really means to mold or shape something. Bara is this word used of the creative activity of God in Genesis 1 that's always used of God and never of anyone else in the Old Testament. Other people can yatzar, no one else can bara in the Old Testament besides God. So Yahweh forms light and creates darkness. Really here they're used almost interchangeably. Asa shalom ubore ra. Again, we get variation in vocabulary here. Who makes wholeness, shalom, and creates ra. Now, it would be, I think, a mistake to translate ra as evil here, although it can be that. That would raise questions about God as the source of evil. And frankly, it's not what's meant. Ra here is contrasted not with tov, but with shalom. So it's the opposite of shalom that we're talking about, as darkness is the opposite of light. So shalom, wholeness, prosperity, and ra, we might translate something like harm or calamity or some hardship, something like that. So the point is that God brings about whatever is good, and he brings about even things that appear to us to be harmful. God is the source of all things. There is no other God. Yahweh is the only God and the source of everything that happens. Ani Yahweh, let's say, kol ele. I am Yahweh, the one who does all these things. So again, these phrases are intended to provide the scope of God's activity, from light to darkness, from good, from prosperity to harm, and everything in between is done by God. And so here, he is able in this context to raise up Cyrus, one who doesn't believe in him, and use Cyrus to accomplish the salvation of his people. That is activity that to us sometimes seems questionable on God's part. Why would God use an unbeliever to do his will? But God does this throughout the Old Testament. He chooses the instruments that he would use in order that his name may be glorified and that he may be revealed to the world. God chooses whom he will choose and does not choose whom he will not choose. Sometimes that means, as here, choosing Cyrus and using Cyrus to deliver.